It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, we are your public radio station, broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we are currently experiencing a rain, fog, slash mist, 38 degrees, 93% humidity out at the airport, where they are also registering northwest winds to 14 miles per hour and 10 miles of visibility. Coming up on the Midday Report, avian influenza has been found in a Kodiak brown bear cub. The Kenai Peninsula Borough School District is sponsoring an Indigenous Language Film Festival in February. And the geothermal energy project in Unalaska has taken another step forward. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Fears that the Fed's continued interest rate hikes will tip the U.S. economy into a recession are evident in today's steep decline in U.S. stocks. Major market indices are reflecting losses ranging from 2% to more than 3%. Inflation slowed, but not enough yet to halt the rate hikes designed to counter soaring prices. NPR's Alina Selyuk says that last month, retail sales took a hit, declining 0.6%.
People spent less on cars and gas, clothes and sporting goods, furniture and electronics. Some of this has to do with a few of these prices actually declining and stores pushing big discounts as holiday shopping kicked into gear. And many people did tighten their shopping budgets in response to inflation, scaling back their discretionary purchases as they kept spending more at grocery stores.
NPR's Alina Selyuk reporting. Well, in a sign that the jobs market remains strong, the government reports that last week fewer Americans filed for unemployment insurance. Claims fell by 20,000 to 211,000 for the week ending December 10th. Public health officials are trying to get ahead of an expected surge in COVID cases this winter. Blake Farmer of member station WPLN in Nashville reports the Biden administration is urging states to step up testing and vaccination.
It's not just making vaccines available, but reminding people why they're important. Tennessee just launched a campaign with NFL players who will hold town halls, like three-time Pro Bowler Javon Kearse.
It's kind of like me playing football without wearing a helmet. I mean, don't get me wrong. I had my share of injuries, but if I didn't wear a helmet and pads, those injuries would have been a lot worse.
Tennessee health officials say they're concerned that less than 5% of residents have received the updated booster. The Biden administration is urging governors to reestablish mobile vaccination sites and resume pop-up testing. The White House is also offering free at-home rapid tests again. Each household can order up to 4 that will arrive by mail. For NPR News, I'm Blake Farmer in Nashville.
Harvard has named its next president, Claudine Gay. From member station GBH in Boston, Kirk Carapeza has details.
Claudine Gay is a social scientist who studies democracy and political participation. She's also the university's current dean of Faculty of Arts and Sciences. And as the daughter of Haitian immigrants, she'll be the first black person to lead the country's oldest college. In a statement, Presidential Search Committee Chair Penny Pritzker says Gay is, quote, a remarkable leader, profoundly devoted to sustaining and enhancing Harvard's academic excellence. She'll take over as Harvard's 30th president in July. For NPR News, I'm Kirk Carapeza in Boston.
The Dow closes down 764 points, more than 2%, ending the day at 33,202. You're listening to NPR News. An Irish peacekeeper with the United Nations has been killed and 3 others wounded after attackers opened fire on a convoy in southern Lebanon. NPR's Ruth Sherlock has details.
Cell phone videos shared online show a white armored 4x4 vehicle speeding to leave a residential area as attackers fire weapons. Sparks fly as a bullet appears to hit the side of the vehicle. The car then reportedly flipped and rolled. The UN peacekeeping force UNIFIL says an Irish peacekeeper was killed and three other soldiers were wounded in the attack. The UNIFIL spokesman says the details of what happened remain sparse and conflicting. UNIFIL patrols the border between Israel and the south of Lebanon and is intended to act as a buffer between Israel and the Lebanese militia Hezbollah. UNIFIL's mission is not always welcomed by local Lebanese residents. The militia tells Reuters news agency it denies involvement in this incident. Ruth Sherlock, NPR News, Beirut.
The Biden administration is blacklisting 36 additional major players in China's tech industry over security concerns for U.S. interests. YMTC is on the list because U.S. officials fear the company could divert U.S. technology to previously blacklisted Chinese tech companies, including Huawei. Among the added entities, Washington is also targeting at least 21 major players in the artificial intelligence industry, including the companies Cambricon and affiliates of China Electronics Technology Group Corporation. I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from DuckDuckGo, a company committed to making privacy online simple. DuckDuckGo's app includes a private search engine, web browser, and email protection with one download. More at DuckDuckGo.com.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. A highly contagious form of avian influenza was found in a Kodiak brown bear cub. KMXT's Brian Venwa reports it's one of only four mammals in Alaska to contract the virus and the first brown bear to be found with the disease.
A deer hunter encountered the cub's carcass late last month, about half a mile from the road near the Passagshack State Recreational Site in Kodiak, and reported it to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. A necropsy later determined the cub died of a strain of avian influenza that has plagued both feral and domestic flocks across the country. Dr. Kimberly Beckman, a wildlife veterinarian for Fish and Game, says the virus doesn't spread between mammals, however, it can affect scavengers like Kodiak brown bears.
It's not foodborne, so they don't get it by ingesting, but they get it by inhaling the virus. So while they're scavenging, they're probably inhaling the virus, and that's how it gets into their system.
The virus has ravaged bird populations across the nation, but especially waterfowl.
It's a virus that's carried by waterfowl normally, and not every bird gets sick, but certain species are more susceptible. And we've been seeing this outbreak mainly hit birds like eagles and ravens and other birds that scavenge on dead birds.
The virus isn't very widespread in mammals, and Beckman says it's not much of a threat to humans either.
In the world, there's only been three people that have had the virus, and the one in the U.S. wasn't even sick from it.
Beckman also says while there have been no cases of domestic pets such as cats or dogs infected with the virus, they could be at risk while swimming or while retrieving hunted game. Nate Svoboda is Fish and Game's Kodiak area wildlife biologist. He says wetland areas near rivers and streams are most likely where waterfowl and other animals can get infected.
Anywhere where waterfowl congregate would be an area that is probably more likely to experience this sort of outbreak or have birds that may have died from this.
Svoboda says some of the most reliable signs of infection would be an animal stumbling around or walking in circles.
For example, the cub that was found in the southeast that also suffered from bird flu, the people who reported it said it appeared drunk.
Other signs of infection are dead animals with no obvious cause of death, such as predation. Svoboda says the best thing the public can do is to keep an eye out and report suspicious animal behavior and deaths to Fish and Game.
If animals start dying for an unknown reason, let us know. You know, even if it's domestic poultry that comes up dead, you know, that would be valuable for us to know and potentially test them for the virus.
The public can report suspicious animal activity or deaths by contacting the agency's Kodiak office. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venwa.
For the first time, the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District is holding an Indigenous Language Film Fest in February. It's part of a greater push to highlight Indigenous languages in the district. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
The festival will showcase short, locally made films featuring Alaska Native languages like Dena'ina. Those films will later be stored for future use by tribal organizations and schools. Rachel Pyok is the district's coordinator for Title VI, which supports programming for Alaska Native and Native American students. She says her departments wanted to incorporate more language programs into the district to celebrate the United Nations Decade of Indigenous Languages, which began this year.
What better way to highlight Indigenous languages than to have people make films that could then be housed and possibly used in tribal or school district classrooms, especially knowing the history of how Indigenous languages have been viewed and silenced by school systems.
A handful of district schools already incorporate Indigenous languages into their curricula, including schools in Port Graham, Nanwalek, and Tayonek. Separately, the Kenaitse Indian tribe is spearheading language revitalization efforts of its own, too. Pyok wants more of that learning to be available through all Kenai Peninsula schools. She says since COVID, the Title VI department has taken a big step toward ramping up the district's cultural programs in general. And the film festival is another branch of that effort. Pyok says she worked with an advisory committee to make sure the project is respectful and authentic. Video submissions can range between 1 and 5 minutes, and just a portion of each film has to feature an Indigenous language.
Even if it's simple as an elder teaching a preschool class a couple of words, what a great video that would be. Just grab your iPhone, ask your umma or your uppa or your auntie a question, and go ahead and get started.
Pyok's already working with Peninsula educators to encourage their students to submit videos. They'll all show at a film festival in February, and after that will be archived on the Title VI website. Already, Pyok says the project has kind of exploded.
So it's actually gone a little bit farther than I thought. We do have a group in Anchorage who has requested, even though it was just supposed to be for the Kenai Peninsula, the Story Knife group for Cook'inlet Tribal Council in Anchorage, it's an after-school program, asked, can our kids please submit? And I said, sure, we'll create a friends and family division.
The festival's open to non-Title VI filmmakers as well. Federal funding covers costs for Title VI students specifically, but Pyok says the district can supplement with additional funds to cover the costs of working with non-Native students. And she says that's important since anyone can benefit from learning more about where they live.
It's giving a voice to the languages of the land and its people.
Pyok hopes the project strikes chords with families, too. She's been moved by her own experience recording her mother, who's Finnish.
Getting her on video telling how to make the traditional bread. I mean, that's such a gift for my family. This can also be a gift for the participants' families.
You can find guidelines for film submissions on the district's Title VI website. The deadline to submit a film is February 1st, 2023. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
After 32 years of state service, Gail Fanumiai has left her post as director of the Division of Elections. She handled an election year like no other, and as Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports, she never lost her cool.
Fanumiai is retiring just as Lieutenant Governor Nancy Dahlstrom takes up her new duties, which include overseeing elections. Fanumiai says the arrival of the new lieutenant governor is coincidental and that no one asked her to resign.
Absolutely not. I started thinking about this in September.
Nationally, doubt in the integrity of elections has threatened the fundamentals of democracy. But in Alaska, Fanumiai just kept going, a steady hand on the rudder, no matter what the wild election year of 2022 threw her way. In March, she learned the slow advance toward the state's first ranked choice election would be a quick sprint due to the death of Congressman Don Young and the sudden need for a special election. In June, she administered the state's first election conducted entirely by mail. In August, 3 months earlier than planned, she directed the first ranked choice election. And, as though to further challenge an elections administrator, that special election took place on the same day as the regular primary, which wasn't all that regular because this year it was under new rules. Fanumii didn't break a sweat.
I didn't personally feel that that was extremely stressful. I think we had a good plan in place.
Her mantra was just to follow the rules as set out in election law. Even if the law is new, even if a special election pops up unexpectedly, even, she says, with extra obligations to educate the public about the new methods of voting.
I'm very proud of all the staff at the division. I think I'm going to go back to the special primary, you know, the first all-by-mail election in the state, a very condensed time frame in which to conduct it, and I think it went very, very well.
Fanumii hasn't taken a position on whether the system Alaskans adopted in 2020, the nonpartisan primary coupled with a ranked choice general, is good or bad. She's not going to spoil her neutrality by venturing an opinion on the way out the door.
And I think it's really important that whoever's in this job has that neutrality, no partisanship, because this job, there's no room for that at all.
One person who has seen Fanumii in action for years is Anchorage attorney Scott Kendall, the architect of Ballot Measure 2, which produced ranked choice voting. He says he witnessed peak Fanumii in 2010 when he represented the U.S. Senate campaign of Lisa Murkowski during her historic write-in campaign.
Gosh, I think it was ultimately 8 days, 10 or 12 hour days, you know, hand counting write-in ballots.
In a big warehouse in Juneau, Fanumii personally reviewed thousands of challenged ballots, hour after hour, day after day. Kendall says he never saw her lose her composure. And if she had a personal opinion about the merits of any ballot challenge, she didn't let on.
I would never play poker with Gail Fanumii. She just had this amazing demeanor of, you know, firm and confident, but just never lost her cool, not once.
Fanumii says she has every confidence that Alaska will continue to conduct elections with the highest level of integrity and transparency. She advises any skeptics to sign up to be a poll worker. They'll see how many checks and balances are built in and how passionate the division staffers are about doing the job right. As for Fanumii, now that her state service is over, she plans to volunteer at her church. She's interested in the food pantry and maybe the summer lunch program. Work always had to come first, but now she can set other priorities. For Alaska Public Media, I'm Liz Ruskin.
A geothermal energy project in Unalaska is taking another step forward in development. KUCB's Theo Greenlee has this report.
The company responsible for the McCushion Geothermal Project says it's finalizing negotiations with an engineering and construction firm. That could be a major milestone for the project, which aims to develop geothermal energy from McCushion Volcano, about 13 miles from Unalaska's city center. The project is being developed through a joint venture between Unalaska's Native Corporation and Fairbanks-based Chena Power. It's known as OCCP, short for Unalaska Corporation Chena Power, LLC. The company entered into an agreement with the city of Unalaska in 2020 and began building a utility access up to the volcano the following year. The original agreement required OCCP to obtain financing by the summer of 2021, but the company was unable to meet that deadline, and the city has twice agreed to give them more time to raise funds. In February of this year, the city agreed to extend the company's funding deadline to the end of 2023. The geothermal project has taken a back burner at recent city council meetings. City Council member Deneen Luby said she hadn't received news on the project for some time. But in a statement to KUCB Monday, OCCP's program manager Dave Matthews said the project is moving forward. He said they are in the final stages of negotiation with a Reno, Nevada-based construction company. Matthew says they'll contract with the company to engineer and construct the project, and they expect to have a signing ceremony in January. Matthews acknowledged funding has been slow, but said there are now two financing opportunities that he called promising. He says they expect to make an announcement in the first quarter of 2023 regarding overall project financing. OCCP says they still plan to complete the McCushion geothermal project by October 2027. Reporting in on Alaska, I'm Theo Greenlee.
In the middle of the holiday shopping season, Americans are spending less. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute. The Commerce Department says November retail sales declined 0.6%. That is compared to the previous month when there was a retail sales jump of more than 1%. Many companies began holiday deals in October. Meanwhile, initial claims for unemployment benefits last week fell to their lowest level in more than 2 months, down to 211,000. The total number of people receiving benefits remained essentially unchanged at nearly 1.7 million. The House has approved a bill to extend government funding one more week. Negotiators in Congress are nearing a broader budget deal to fund the government through next September. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
What if accessing your personal and family immunization records was as easy as checking your phone? The Docket app is a secure option that allows Alaskans to quickly access their immunization records. Need immunization records for school or travel? Docket makes it simple and is available for download from the App Store or Google Play. Learn more at vaccinationrecords.alaska.gov. Paid for by the Alaska Department of Health.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon, and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the 15th day of December, the year 2022. The sun rose today at 9:48, and it will set again promptly at 4:21. That will give us 6 hours and 34 minutes of precious daylight, a loss of 59 seconds, less than 1 minute, compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 3 degrees, set in Chile in 1925, and our record high was 45 degrees, set in 2014. We were close to that this morning, but it's dropped down to 38 degrees now. We have a light rain falling, northwest winds to 6 miles per hour, and out at the airport they are reporting 10 miles of visibility. Look for cloudy skies for the rest of the day with a high near 41 and calm winds. 20% chance of rain tonight, at least until 9 p.m. Mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 30. North winds becoming northwest to 5, maybe to 10 after midnight. Mostly sunny tomorrow with a high near 36, northwest winds to 15. Partly cloudy overnight tomorrow night with a low around 26, northwest winds to 15. And partly sunny on Saturday with a high near 39, east winds to 15. They are calling for a chance of snow on Saturday night, and Sunday through Wednesday, chance of rain and snow. Looking at our local tides, we are just about to have a low tide here on the east side. That will happen at 12:27 this afternoon and be 3.9 feet. The high tide will only be 3 feet or so higher than that at 6:08 p.m., a 6.6 foot tide. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 1:10 this afternoon and be 6 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 6:46 this afternoon of 10.5 feet. Mariners, here is your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory through tomorrow. Southwest 25 today, seas to 16 feet. For tomorrow, northeast 15, seas to 10 feet. And for Friday night, northeast 20, seas to 8 feet. Saturday and Sunday, east 25, seas to 8 feet. Over on our west side, in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory tonight and Friday. For today, west winds to 20 knots, seas to 7 feet. For tonight, northeast 25, seas to 8 feet. And same forecast for tomorrow and tomorrow night, northeast 25, seas to 8 feet. Saturday through Sunday in the Shelikof, northeast 30, seas to 9 feet. Well, the Kodiak Kiwanis Christmas tree people have a few trees left, 18 to be exact, so they're having an overstock sale tomorrow. That's happening 4 to 7 p.m. at the usual spot at 111 Bartell Avenue. They have those 18 trees, plus more cedar garland by the foot, and 5 mantelpieces left. 4 to 7 p.m. And for Friday, also, Skate with Santa is coming. Tomorrow is KMXT's free open skate with Santa and the elves. Everyone will be there, and there will be hot cocoa for everyone. The Skate Shack will be open as well, and free skates are available for anyone needing them. Again, that's tomorrow evening, Skate with Santa. On Saturday, join your friends and neighbors to watch the Kodiak Fleet light up with holiday lights and parade through Near Island Channel. That's happening Saturday from 6 to 9 p.m. If high winds cause the parade to be canceled, the decorated boats will still be available in the two harbors, St. Paul and St. Herman. But here's hoping. It looks like the weather's going to be pretty nice on Saturday night. They're calling for just a chance of snow, mostly cloudy skies. For more information, contact the Kodiak Maritime Museum at 907-486-0384. And KMXT's calendars are in. The 2023 calendars are in, and they are beautiful. Thanks to everyone who submitted this year, and special thanks to those photographers who had their entries picked for the calendar. If you're a current member, stop by and pick up your free calendar, and additional copies can be had for a mere $15. Non-members can also pick up copies for $20 each. They're a great gift idea for those on your shopping list who need that special bit of beauty on the wall. The Kodiak Island Borough's clerk's office is advising us that the assembly special meeting will be happening tonight in the Borough Assembly Chambers. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. On December 21st, on Wednesday, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having a regular meeting, also in the Borough Assembly Chambers, and also at 6:30 p.m. These meetings are open to the public, and meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. The next assembly work session will be Thursday, December 29th, and the assembly regular meeting after that will be Thursday, January 5th. The Kodiak Archipelago Regional Management Body for the Alaska Migratory Bird Co-Management Council, that's the AMBCC, will conduct its fall meeting tonight. That's happening 5 to 9 p.m., and I will tell you an email address to write down for the link. The purpose of the meeting is to make subsistence harvest recommendations for migratory birds. These recommendations approved at the meeting will be advanced to the spring 2023 statewide AMBCC meeting. The Zoom meeting will be held at 5 to 9 tonight. For a meeting link or additional information, contact Kelly Kruger. Her email address is kkruegr at sunac.org. That's sunaq.org. And AMSI will be conducting a 2-day fishing vessel drill conductor class January 4th and 5th. That's happening in Kodiak, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. with drills and a pool session. That's starting out at the Kodiak Seafood and Marine Science Center over on Near Island at 118 Trident Way. Cost for the class is free for Kodiak Commercial Fishing Fleet, $225 for all others. This class meets the U.S. Coast Guard training requirement for drill conductors on commercial fishing vessels. Register online at www.amsea.org, that's AMSEA, or call them at 907-747-3287. And don't forget, Mattson has sponsored free admission to the Aleutic Museum until December 23rd. So take this opportunity, courtesy of Mattson, to go visit the Aleutic Museum. Unfortunately, though, due to construction at the Kodiak Fisheries Research Center, Touch Tank will be closed until next week anyway. They apologize for any inconvenience, but the Touch Tank is closed until next week at least. The community of Kodiak produces more garbage in the month of December than any other month of the year. Most of that is due to gift packaging and cardboard going to the landfill. You could help reduce that flow by giving gifts of experience, like a certificate for dinner or a gift certificate to a local store. Your loved one will get a gift they'll remember, and you'll help out the environment and the community by minimizing that flow of garbage to our landfill. And don't forget to flatten out the cardboard that you do have and take it to the threshold or to a cardboard dumpster. Thanks and happy holidays from the Borough Solid Waste Advisory Board, the SWAB.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.